Welcome to Pop Culture Happy Hour. High Maintenance is a comedy that started as a web series and has made it to premium cable, specifically HBO. Now in its second season there, it's a loose collection of New York stories tied together by one wandering pot dealer.
That dealer, known only as The Guy, visits his customers, sometimes only fleetingly. We get a chance to see what they're doing when they're not buying from him. I'm Glenn Wellen.
And I'm Linda Holmes. We're talking about the unconventionally structured, surprisingly warm comedy High Maintenance on this week's Pop Culture Happy Hour.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from WordPress.com. WordPress.com offers e-commerce options that range from an effective buy button to a complete online store, as well as code-free site building, so you don't need a professional designer to get your website up and running. If you need help, WordPress has a customer support team that is available 24/7. Learn more and get 15% off any new plan purchase at wordpress.com/happyhour.
Welcome back. You just met Glenn Wellen of the NPR Arts Desk. Two of our favorite people are in the studio to talk about High Maintenance with us. First, the host of All Things Considered and frequent actual news person, Audie Cornish. Hi, Audie.
Hey there.
And, of course, Weekend Edition editor, Barry Hardiman. Hey, Barry.
Hey there.
Such a pleasure to see everybody. Glenn, you were the person who first told me about High Maintenance. Uh-huh. And you might remember my reaction was tentative.
To say the least.
Was it a no thank you?
I do not love stoner humor.
Yeah, yeah. I think we've talked about this many times, you and I, Linda, but I don't think the listeners know. I don't think it's come up on the show. Could you go into your anti-stoner comedy
thing? It's anti-stoner comedy, not anti-stoner. I'm not offended by it. I just tend to find it boring. I tend to find...
So Broad City, no?
Yes.
Oh, that's right. Broad City, no.
And yes, I tend to find things where people sit around a lot getting high, and it's just not interesting to me. It's like watching a show where people are drunk all the time. It's just not interesting to me. And I don't particularly like how kind of self-important some people are about, like, their weed comedy.
Yeah.
I just don't care. And I was afraid that that was what this was, that this was like, I'm just going to say it, Seth Rogen all the time.
Sure.
Wow.
For doing the version of himself where he's high all the time.
You pitched Friday Night Lights to me as, it's not really about football. And you're right, but it's all about football.
Uh-huh.
Similarly, this isn't that. Mm-hmm. This isn't that sort of comedy, but there's some of that. What I love about the show is how it starts out. You think we're going to be getting caricatures of these New York hipsters, and it always mellows into something, as you said, warmer and more empathetic. And just observant. It has an unhurried tone, which I think is kind of where the stoner fit, really, a very unhurried pace.
It does have an unhurried tone.
Yeah, but I just think it is so observant and so quiet that I just really dig it.
Yeah. How about you, Barry?
This is one of my favorite things and has been for a long time, like web series. I adore these people. And I think it's gotten really, really good since it moved to HBO. I think it has actually gone up a level. And again, what I love is that there's just when you think the show is going to skewer somebody,
mm-hmm.
it gives them a big warm hug. And there's a sense of place. I mean, it is a love letter to Brooklyn.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you see the same street artist. You see the places you're going.
In many ways, Brooklyn is a character in the show.
Just a place for me. Mm-hmm. But it also could also, as much as it is, you know, that feels more like a color to me. It could also take place anywhere because it is just like, I know people keep saying this, but it is this sort of anthology of short stories. And there are so many moments where I have found myself, you know, because it is full of one-liners and many of the one-liners are stoner one-liners.
Mm-hmm.
But there are many, many times where I have found myself like choking up, which is not at all what I think one would expect from it.
Yeah. How about you, Audie? What do you think?
I had heard of the web series but never watched it. When it came on HBO, I didn't watch it for a while. And so I'm coming to it as like the consumer who is seeing the sort of prestige product after all the work has been put in. And I did really enjoy it. I don't think it's as warm as Barry is saying. Like, I've had moments where I thought, this is bittersweet, and depending on the episode, is it more bitter or is it more sweet?
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the opening of this season is very incisive, very sharp, and if anything, kind of takes a razor to the people they know and love in their Brooklyn, New York community, like, politically.
Right.
For people who are watching it, it's a kind of post-election episode.
Oh.
And it's not a spoiler alert. alert to mm-hmm. say people in Brooklyn were unhappy. And this really, really, really mocks them very seriously.
That is so interesting. I thought thought it was any 9/11.
Yeah.
I didn't think it was the election.
I felt that was intentionally that way.
Yeah. I think there are a couple of
things. I actually loved that it was so big.
I think there are a couple of things where it seems like maybe it could be, but it also seems like maybe it isn't. And I think that whatever you think it is, I think Audie is right that their responses to it are being kind of critiqued as sort of somewhat understandable and yet useless
right.
in a way.
Yes, yes.
But just to give another example, in a later episode, there are some conversations with some young feminists that are also satirical.
Right.
You know, they know these people well, and that is why they are able to make the jokes they can
they
make
They skewer
about
liberal
it.
Culture in a particular
exactly,
way.
Exactly. And I found that very intriguing about mm-hmm. the series in general.
Yeah, mm-hmm. but there is one episode from the first HBO season called Selfie about this blogger who's addicted to social media, which is the only time I thought the series was a little tone deaf. It felt like it was being made by some middle-aged studio guys who were making fun of millennials. It just, there wasn't much there beneath the she's addicted to social media.
Mm-hmm.
But then you have an episode with the dog. Love the episode with the dog. Oh, that was a great wonderful episode.
The dog is very...
Yeah, I loved it.
There's a whole episode that's essentially told from the point of view of a dog.
Mm-hmm.
In the first season.
In the first season, whose owner kind of makes friends with, originally kind of makes friends with a dog walker. And it seems maybe like it's going to turn into like a guy and dog walker romantic comedy, but it's not that.
No.
And
it's just so gorgeous, yeah.
And there is an episode from this season called Scrumple, I think, where the guy has an accident and he's in the hospital and he bonds with what we find out is his ex-wife. They never actually signed the divorce papers.
Mm-hmm.
But that episode starts out as stoner comedy, as he's on drugs.
He's in a hospital. Yeah.
And then we find out that what this is doing is it's serving a purpose. It's their bond is the drugs that they do. We get a really good picture of how their relationship worked and what it was like. And the entire series is really about loneliness and what people do to avoid it. And that really brought that home. And then the next episode, when he is he can't make his rounds and he's forced to spend a day alone, starts out with just there is stoner comedy. There is like, I'm high and it's kicking in. And you just kind of settle in your chair like, I've seen this before. But then it goes somewhere. It's what it's doing. It's exposing his loneliness.
But to go back to the ex-wife for a second, that's kind of the Jerry Orbach moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know how Law and Order is basically a procedural and you don't know anything until all of a sudden someone does something.
Like, he's an alcoholic.
Right, yeah.
What happened to his daughter?
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, and then you go back to the crimes. And because this is an anthology, you're in these other worlds. You don't know much about him, and then every once in a while they'll take a little bit of time in some moment to reveal something about him, and it can be very affecting.
Yeah.
To the liberal culture thing, because I agree with you, I think it's come a long way. I think the actually that very episode with the women and the snake, which is amazing for comedy, and Ben Sinclair trying to both.
And the plot of this episode is there's a women's meetup, and they're talking about just being feminists and women only, and a snake
holding,
has escaped in the building.
But more than that, Ben Sinclair has come to deliver weed, and he's a man. Mm-hmm. And so there is this acting, which is really astounding, where he's trying to both be, a gun appears, but where he's trying to avoid a gun, but also not take up too much space as a guy, which is just, he does this amazing thing. But what I wanted to say is that that episode is also juxtaposed with the parents that come to visit the daughter. That is one of those things where instead of skewering millennials, because there's a lot of millennial stuff in there, she has gotten this Airbnb for her parents and it's dirty and messy and there's a snake, who is Chekhov's snake, who appears in the later episode with a gun. But there's such an even-handed, loving skewering of both the millennials and the boomers. The boomers who don't really understand their daughter and where she's living and what her life is like, but know they have to keep a foot in. And there are things they have in common, like the weed. But that was one of those things where I thought, oh, this is more than just a poke at a certain kind of Brooklyn culture. This is actually a thing about parenting and generations that is saying something kind of profound and warm, I thought.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it is warm, but I also think one of the challenges for me is that it is so bleak in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. It's you know, when Glenn said it's about loneliness, Glenn's kind of like, it's about loneliness. Awesome. And I'm kind of like, it's about loneliness all the time. Right. And, you know, in a lot of ways, that character of the guy is all of his relationships are literally transactional, right? In a literal sense, but also in the way in which people mean that when they say all of his relationships are with people who only call him when they want something. Mm-hmm. Like nobody ever, you really never, and I won't say never, but you incredibly rarely see him talking to anyone who got in touch with him mm-hmm. just because I like you and I want to hang out with you.
Even arguably the ex-wife.
Yeah.
In this very pivotal moment, mm-hmm. she shows up because she kind of wanted some weed. Mm-hmm. And he was in the hospital.
And remember, he's texting everybody trying to get help and he can't.
Yeah. I think the bleakness of his life mm-hmm. is kind of the center of the show in this very particular way. And at the same time, you know, when you talk about the stuff about kind of Brooklyn hip liberals and all that stuff, I also think it's important to keep in mind that this is a very specific slice of weed culture, right? Mm-hmm. This is weed culture for people who don't worry that much about getting arrested, yeah. getting stopped, suffering consequences. He is a big-time weed dealer. Mm-hmm. He deals a lot of weed. And probably were his circumstances different and he were a guy who couldn't just wheel around Brooklyn on a bike with a backpack all day long without anybody bothering him, the stakes for him would be very different. This is a very specific slice of weed culture. Like, this is not everybody, you know, this is not everybody's drug experience.
That's true.
One of the things I like is that from time to time you see how casual people are in circumstances where you might expect them to be less casual. You know, parents with their kids.
Yes. Or, yeah, yeah.
You know, where they make it clear that this is a slice of culture where technically, it's illegal, so when you text him, you just say, can you hang, mm-hmm. instead of can I buy some weed, because it's illegal. But they're not very worried about it.
There's a moment in the episode where he's relinquished his route to this Uber driver, I think. The Uber driver just wants to park in front of somebody's house and have them come out into the car and buy there. And he says, yeah, but then you miss seeing everybody's homes. It's kind of the best part.
Yeah.
And you're like, oh, well, there's the organizing principle of the show. There's the show right there.
Right,
that
right,
it
right.
is kind of the best part, to have these very varied stories of a very thin slice of, mm-hmm. of life. But the other thing is that we keep meeting the same people over and over mm-hmm. again, as you would. All these characters from the web episodes, mm-hmm. many of them have come into the series, even if it's just glancingly. You see a glimpse of Dan Stevens, who did a really great web episode. And Michael Cyril Crichton, who we've talked about on the show before, he had an episode back in the web series called Patrick, which is about an agoraphobic dude. Ugh. And it's just so funny and so heartbreaking, and he comes back and gets a little bit of closure. Now, he wrote that episode of the web series himself, and he didn't write this episode that was just, at the end of the first season on HBO. But it's so great to be able to see these people that you recognize come back, revisit, even if they're just on the periphery. It adds to this sense of community, this feeling of everybody's in this together.
I was just going to add, I know you guys probably have talked about this before, but I really want to take a moment and praise, like, the anthology show movement.
Mm. Yeah.
Love it.
I love it, because sometimes I don't want to puzzle through mm-hmm. things. Mm-hmm. I don't want to be in a slow-building atmospheric show. I don't mm-hmm. have the time or wherewithal.
No, and I want to see a lot of different faces.
Yeah.
I love that, like, in praise of character actors getting these amazing tiny roles. Mm-hmm. Like, it's so wonderful to see this huge array of people.
Yeah.
Which is another reason to, for sure, to
and
watch.
And really good, really naturalistic acting.
Beautiful
nobody's
acting.
Pushing, nobody's mm-mm. pushing, nobody's going too big. And that's just because you make it in New York. You have these teeming hordes of yeah. unemployed actors who are just ready to jump in. But it's one of the standpoints of the show is how good the acting is.
I feel like that maybe the way you feel about this series, not whether you like it or not, but whether you feel that it is like about loneliness or if it's about how to solve loneliness. For me, I don't, like, this is not the leftovers of comedy. You know, this is not about grief so much as it's about reaching out for mm-hmm. me, I think, and the relationships that matter, whether they are cultural or familial or sometimes transactional. So for me, it's funny. It's interesting to hear you all talk about this. There are certainly episodes that are harder to watch than others. I feel like it's a kind of, in the end, it's a fairly uplifting series? Am I?
I never feel that at the end of it.
I never feel that way.
It's really
never, ever.
I am a Pollyanna.
It's really
weed watcher, guys. I was high when I watched it.
I didn't want to say it.
So
you
know
how this affects the viewing process.
It is really interesting to hear you say that, because to me it is. What it is for me is a really good show about extraordinarily lonely people most of the time. As I said, I enjoy it and can watch it on that basis, but not a whole lot of it at the same time, which is another...
Oh, yeah, I don't think I would... It would be hard to binge.
Which is another reason why I like the anthology setup for it, because you don't... If you're interested in this show and you want to try it... Find one of the ones that we're talking about and just watch one. You don't have to go back to the beginning.
Right.
You will. He doesn't remember anything that's ever happened
that's
to him.
That's certainly true.
That's not true.
Yeah.
But you don't have to go back to the beginning and excavate some long backstory with a ton of references and cross references and all that stuff. If you do, as Glenn said, you will see people appear and reappear. Yeah. But I think they do a good job of making that a payoff if you do it. But not a problem if you don't do it.
Mm. Like, I had no idea that people viewed this as such a... I will be very interested to see folks listening what you think.
I think it's both. I think everyone's right. And one of the things about it is it is so... It feels so personal and specific in its viewpoint. Mm-hmm. It's created by Ben Sinclair and Katya Blickfeld. And they created it. To me, it follows in that tradition of the kind of... Atlanta and Louis and these very personal and insecure
view, right.
And these very singular
worldviews
that define what those shows are like, where they're not trying to be all things to all people. They're trying to look at the world in a very specific way. And what separates this one is the anthology business. And I think one of the things that I admire about it so much is that they're doing an anthology, but a lot of anthology shows, if you look back at like The Twilight Zone and stuff like that, they are plot driven, right?
That's
because
true.
You are trying to hook people in the length of an anthology episode. You're hooking people with a riddle or a mystery or a what's the end plot point going to be. It is really a high wire act to try to hook people on an anthology series where it is 90% character
studies.
You're supposed to get to know in that period of time. These episodes are half hour long. Mm-hmm. And in that period of time, often you get more than one story. Mm. And so in 12 or 13 minutes, and sometimes less than that, there's one that's very short where a guy tries to quit the internet. And it's very short. And not a lot like happens in one way. A lot happens, I guess, but in that very short time, they're trying to get you invested in the person, not in a whodunit or a, what's the kind of Rod Serling catch at the end of the episode, but in the person and in what's going to happen to them. All right. Well, let us know what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH.
I also want to know if anyone out there has ever been the recipient and or also done the accidental love you by. Because I feel like I really want to say that that's
audience
the thing
just,
I've done
audience
quite
just
often.
Shaking her head.
Nope.
Well, Glenn would never do
no,
that.
No, I would never do that.
That's not a Glenn.
Just, I cannot.
Not a Glenn or an Audie.
Jessica? No. I'm looking in the control room. She's like, nope.
I have to remember to say it to my family. So sure. Maybe I'm biased. There. But I thought that was
I mean,
just
boy.
One of the saddest things I've ever
said. I say it to the new dog, and I only met him 2 days ago.
There we go.
All right. Well, let us know what you think. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/PCHH or tweet at us at PCHH. I am so glad that we got a chance to talk about this because it was a deeper thing than I thought it was going to be when I thought it was going to be a bunch of 420
You
jokes.
Thought it was Cheech and Chong. Neither Cheech nor Chong showed up.
Thank you for getting me to watch this, Glenn. You can follow Barry at B. Hardiman. You can follow Audie at NPR Audie. And of course, thank you for listening. If you have a second and you're so inclined, please give us a review on Apple Podcasts. That will help more folks to find the show, and it will help us to defeat our enemies. We'll be back here on Friday for our annual check-in on the happenings at this year's South by Southwest. Thanks, you guys.
Thank you.
Thank you. Love you. Bye.
We'll see you then.
Hello, just dropping in to remind you about Here and Now. We cover the day's most essential news with context so you know the why and what's next. A fast-paced snapshot of the world every day. Listen to Here and Now on NPR One or wherever you listen to podcasts.